When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Beth Lindop and I'm back in the hosting hot seat today as we reflect on Liverpool's 1-1 draw with Luton Town in the Premier League. Now, there might not have been many fireworks from Jurgen Klopp's side at Kenilworth Road, but I'm lucky enough to be joined by a stellar panel who will hopefully help bring some sparkle to today's pod. Paul Gore, start. LFC correspondent, how magical was it, your first trip to the Kenny?
Do you know what? I was expecting a typical kind of lower league ground where it's very tight, very compact, and the atmosphere is ferocious. And for a Premier League club, that's exactly what it was. And I'm, you know, we're going to come on to some of the chants and stuff like that. But, you know, other than that, that's kind of the hostile atmosphere that they like to create. And it was an experience, shall I say. It reminded me a little bit of when Liverpool played Shrewsbury a few years back in the FA Cup, you know, that type of environment. So, yeah, just wanted to tick off, I guess, on my list of venues. But we're going to come on to the performance now, aren't we? And it wasn't good enough, to be honest, but we'll see if we're back there next season. I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I'm also joined by Keith MacDonald. Now, Keith, you said coming into the office yesterday you had a bit of a bad feeling. Are you a bit of a psychic when it comes to Premier League upsets?
I think just a pessimist, to be honest. I don't know why, I just had a bit of a bad feeling about yesterday, I suppose. I just had to go last year there. I'm not sure what I could attribute that to, but, you know, kind of paid off really, didn't it? That, you know, Liverpool didn't perform. Plenty to discuss, plenty of talking points. I'm sure we'll get to them shortly.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, goes to you there for us. And it was a weird one, wasn't it, really? Because for 95 minutes, it was such a frustrating performance. And the story of the match, I guess, was already written until sort of the 95th minute, Luis Diaz comes on and salvages an emotional late equaliser. But what did you make of it overall yesterday?
Yeah, it was... It just wasn't great, was it, at all? You know, we've waxed lyrical loads about Liverpool this season, about their ability to, you know, look like they're kind of back to their old selves with a little bit of a new swagger and a new midfield. But this was a shocking kind of regression to the dark days of last season when the likes of Bournemouth and Brentford and Wolves and, you know, even Brighton to an extent were beating Liverpool quite comfortably away from home. Liverpool got a bit of an issue now, I think, with teams who they should be beaten on paper away from home. You know, last season, you're looking at it, they went to Fulham on the opening weekend, they'd just been promoted to a 2-2 draw. They got beat at Bournemouth, and they got beat by Forest as well. So that's 1 point from 9 against newly promoted teams. Last season, they've now made it 2 points from 12, you know, if you throw Luton into the mix. And that's a statistic that needs to change, really. If Liverpool have got serious hopes on doing something this season, they need to be winning these sorts of games. And, you know, it massively impacted them last season and it didn't get top four because of results like that. So, you know, if Liverpool would have turned, you know, even like 6 or 7 points instead of, you know, that run that they actually did get, you could be looking at being in the Champions League this season. So it makes a massive difference and they just weren't at it at all yesterday. Too many off the boil. Mo Salah was ineffective. So Bosley probably had his poorest game that I've seen him have as a Liverpool player. McAllister, again, some question marks over whether he is a long-term candidate for that number six role. Joe Gomez at left-back didn't really work. Just all over the pitch. And Darwin Nunez's miss is just absolutely shocking, isn't it? You know, we've spoken about him a lot on this pod. Kind of laughing off when, you know, we should be scoring against Toulouse or Union Saint-Gilloise in the Europa League and Liverpool are still winning. But when he's missing those sorts of chances and Liverpool aren't winning, that's when it becomes a big problem. Some suggestions that the offside flag was raised, that I thought it was actually the offside, the linesman putting at the goal kick. But he should have scored it nonetheless. But, I suppose the good news is Liverpool didn't lose.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you touched on it there, Kiefer, in terms of Liverpool's record against nearly promoted sides. And obviously last season failed to beat any of those sides away from home. But it's actually October 2021, which was Liverpool's last win against a newly promoted side. That was Watford, the 5-0 dispatch of Watford. What's going on there? What do you think it is that makes them so poor against these sides that they should be beating?
I'm not sure. But I mean, if that's kind of throw my kind of 50 pence in, I don't know if it's like the low block, and that's, you know, we've seen that in, you know, Klopp this year's reference that it's, you know, year one of Liverpool. You know, if you kind of go back to his early tenure in, you know, 2015, 2016, you know, they could compete against the big sides, the Cities, the Uniteds, but then it was kind of those, as we see, these kind of defeats like yesterday that were kind of their Achilles heel. And I'm not sure what it is, but, you know, you look at how Luton's goal came yesterday, and maybe Liverpool were committing too many men. I think they left one on the halfway line, which and Elliot was on the edge of the box, and all of a sudden they clear the ball out, and it's a 3-on-1 at one point. So I'm not entirely sure. It's weird, isn't it? Because it feels like 2 points dropped, but in reality it should be viewed as a point gain yesterday, because it's up until the 95th minute to produce something. And as Gorsy says, if you've got aspirations of, you know, competing in the Champions League, at the top end of the Premier League, you can't be viewing trips to Luton as a point gain. But that's the reality of what yesterday was. But, you know, I think whilst this year we've seen like really good sides of Liverpool, and, you know, maybe they've kind of exceeded expectations at times. You know, you think of the win at Newcastle, and kind of how they dispatched teams like Villa with ease, and even Nottingham Forest last weekend. I think this was kind of a firm reminder, as Klopp kind of said all along, that, you know, this, don't get too carried away. There is still a long way to go in this journey until they are going to reach the heights of kind of the predecessors of, you know, 21, 22 and so on. But yeah, it was just deflating. It was kind of a momentum zapping, wasn't it? Because it felt like everyone has kind of had that date with City circled on the 25th of November, and it felt like if you go to there with the difference between the two sides being 1 point, then, you know, you've almost got a free hit, because if you lose that and it's 4 points, it's not the end of the world. If you get a draw there, it's 1 point, it's not the end of the world. But all of a sudden you think, you know, they've got, if they lose that, well, they, you know, if they beat Brentford next week, it'll be the gap's still 3 points. So if they lose at City, it'll be six. And then all of a sudden they've got United and Arsenal next one. So it just shows kind of how quickly things can change. On the flip side to that is if they had won yesterday and they had won next week, they go into that game, as I say, City, you know, bounces into it, I think, you know, would have been 5 wins consecutively in the Premier League. So it's just a bitter pill to swallow, really, because, as I say, they've kind of done all the hard work this season at times with 10 men and kind of in the face of adversity. And then it was like, on paper, what should have been a straightforward task against newly promoted Luton, like, no disrespect to them, and they kind of fluffed their lines.
Yeah, I mean, Keith just sums it up perfectly there, Gorsy, but you are sort of loath to criticise this Liverpool team because there has been so much to like about them since the start of this season. But this is a problem, as we've mentioned, that dates back to sort of the early days of Jurgen Klopp's tenure, and even in the title winning season back in 2020, they had that 3-0 defeat away to Watford, didn't they? Who were, you know, sort of relegation fodder, and they managed to hand Liverpool their first Premier League defeat of the season. Do you think it can be levelled at Liverpool? Sometimes it's maybe a bit of an attitude issue, maybe it's a little bit of complacency sets in sometimes against these teams.
Yeah, certainly since the start of last season, definitely. It was something you could never really properly level at Liverpool. Normally, you know, if they didn't get a result, it wasn't really down to being an attitude thing. But you're looking at it now and you're thinking, well, maybe, is it? Because particularly the Bournemouth game in March, you know, they went there 6 days after beating Man United 7-0, and they got beat. Bournemouth were, I think they might have even been bottom of the league that afternoon. And you're looking at it, you're trying to explain reasons for why, and perhaps there is a little bit of an attitude issue, maybe. You know, the likes of Andy Robertson was a massive miss yesterday. You know, those types of players ensure that the mentality and the preparation and all that kind of stuff is spot on. Liverpool have got enough leaders in there to make sure that it isn't a problem. But there's, you know, maybe it was yesterday. I think they didn't really create too many chances, did they? I think if you're looking at it and you know, the keeper's pulled off a load of worldies and whatever, and you think sometimes that can happen. But it wasn't overly worked, really, Kaminski. You know, the saves he made were saves that you'd expect a Premier League goalkeeper to make. Nunes was a little bit unlucky when he hits the bar in the first half, and then obviously he should score. But other than that, there wasn't too much, was there? Jota had that one that he saved. Nunes had another couple that he's been quite comfortable for the keeper. So it was just one of those days where Liverpool were off key. You know, I think I said on Friday, didn't I, that Liverpool's front five options mean that, you know, if you keep three of them quiet, the other two off the bench will come on and chase the game or whatever. But that was probably as poor as a collective as I've seen for a long time. Only for Diaz popping up with the equaliser in the last minute with a header, or 95th minute, you know, you'd be looking at a really embarrassing setback. So, you know, fair play to Diaz for first declaring himself available and then coming off and rescuing a team. But other than that, there was just nothing really to take as a positive from yesterday. It was a really, really poor afternoon. And like Kiefer says, now they've got to go into that Brentford game and get 3 points. I mean, they should be doing that anyway at home, but it just puts a little bit more pressure on it. And then, you know, if they don't get it, you're going into that international break and the picture looks a lot gloomier.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Whether it's the legendary Lionesses, grassroots or expert analysis of the women's leagues, Women's Football News has it all covered. A brand new monthly magazine packed with news, interviews and expert opinion. Don't miss Women's Football News. Pick up a copy today from participating retailers. Women's football is here to stay, and so are we.
I mean, collectively, it was a really poor performance, wasn't it? And it's harsh to sort of lay the blame squarely on anybody's shoulders. Yeah. I think Jota probably should have done better, actually, with that effort in the first half.
He has more time than he realised, and he kind of snatches at it, doesn't he?
I think he maybe should have gone across the...
Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't.
When he tried to catch him out, isn't he?
And Mo Salah, of course, with that header that led to that Darwin Nunes miss, you know, undoubtedly was going for goal there, and he made a bit of a hash of it. So... you know, there wasn't one player culpable for it solely, but obviously Darwin Nunes will get most of the headlines for all the wrong reasons, for that miss. I mean, you know, as Gorsty said earlier, well, after that Toulouse game, we all sort of said, you know, oh, well, it's not too bad because it didn't impact Liverpool too harshly. You know, they were already winning the game. It was in the Europa League. But like I said on the pod that week, you know, if that miss comes against a side when it's 0-0 and it goes on to cost Liverpool, then actually it's not very funny. And so it proved yesterday. He's got to sort of cut those mistakes out of his game, hasn't he?
Absolutely, especially off the back of what he did at Bournemouth on Wednesday night. That kind of felt like it summed him up. And I know there was, you know, a bit of discourse about his touch and whatnot, whether it was a bad touch or whatever. But, you know, just kind of plucking that moment out of, you know, just the air and winning Liverpool the game like that was kind of... what you want to see from Darwin Nunes on a regular basis. And I think the kind of assessment I've made of him is when he's got time to think and he could kind of brain goes into overdrive is where he's at his worst, isn't he?
Bit like Didier Drogba, but in that respect, I always thought when he was instinctive, that was he was at his best, and Nunes seems a bit similar, really.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of comparison maybe with Suarez, and you could probably put him in that same bracket of just, you know, in half spaces and half seconds to win games, he can do that. But, you know, if you think of what, I mean, he's not going to be an Erling Haaland, is he? But if Liverpool are going to want a number nine to win in the Premier League and win in the Champions League, that's kind of the level that they got to be looking at. And I don't think anyone's doubting the attributes that he's got. If he gets other kind of the mental side, I think, of his game right, I think he could certainly, you know, one day be scoring 25, 30 goals in the Premier League on a regular basis. But it's just it's as you say, Beth, it's kind of cutting out all the nonsense that comes with it, because, you know, he's made such big progress this season. He's made such big steps on and off the field in terms of, you know, being able to communicate with his teammates. And I think, you know, Klopp has mentioned that, I think last week as well, he said that, you know, no longer does he, you know, to communicate with him was quite hard at the start. And now it's obviously not a smooth process, but a smoother process. And obviously now he's starting games for Liverpool on a regular basis. And I even thought yesterday the fact that he was deployed on the left, and I know Joe Gomez is like a more defensively stable option, but clearly Klopp is now trusting him in tracking back and following runners, and that's something that, you know, even as early as I don't know, April time, Klopp kind of mentioned as a bit of a red flag of Nunes that he wasn't maybe, you know, robust in the process of pressing and counter-pressing, and he said that was his ticket into the team. But it kind of feels like he's got that side of his game on the up, and it's just he's kind of silly misses that, you know, get clipped and shared and whatever, and it's not going to do him as a person any good, is it? So you just kind of hope that you can kind of eradicate them, because, as you say, it's all well and good doing it against Toulouse when, you know, he's already scored and, you know, he's already got the headlines in his own capacity, but to do it, you know, on an afternoon night yesterday when Liverpool really needed someone to step up, you know, that's what people are going to kind of remember his performance as yesterday as. And I think just to go back to, as you were saying earlier, trends against, you know, newly promoted sides, I think if you look at it from a Luton perspective, you know, I know they didn't have an abundance of chances, Liverpool, but the ones they did miss, they just grow in belief, don't they? I mean, even not necessarily the Jota one, but the Nunes one, I think he does all the right stuff to kind of control it on his knee and kind of get the shot away. But, you know, if he just had an extra touch or maybe a bit of delicacy about it, maybe lifted it over the goalkeeper, obviously it's easier said than done.
Just chip the keeper.
Yeah. No, but well, do you know what I mean?
I think to be fair, I think he'd done the hardest part.
That's what I mean, in control on the ball.
He was moving on to it at some speed and he took it well in the stride.
Yeah.
And then he's hit it almost in one motion. And he's been unlucky with that one, I thought. Yeah. But I know what you mean, yeah.
But and then even, I always think back to the Forest game last year of how many chances they missed early doors. And, you know, you referenced the Bournemouth defeat earlier this year. They missed a penalty. And teams like that who live for moments and they hang on, they'll have a game plan of about 20 minutes, keep it, you know, keep it tight, don't give them anything. You know, 45 to 60, keep it tight, give them nothing. And then you might look to grow into the game and they could counter attack and they could go on. That's exactly what Luton did yesterday. And, you know, Liverpool put one of those, you know, half chances, if you want to call them that, yesterday, whether it be Jota, Nunes, or, you know, even the glaring Nunes one in the second half. I don't think Luton come back. They probably think, look, we'll take a 1-0 here because we could have, you know, on another day been beaten 3 or 4-0. And, you know, sides like that will be looking at goal difference as points come the end of the season. So it's fine margins like that which allow Luton's to kind of build on and then ultimately comes back and bite you when you don't take your chances.
Yeah, I'd be reluctant to be too critical of Nunes because he's having a really good season. But if he scores that yesterday, he scores the one against Toulouse, he scores the one against USG, he's on to 10 there for the season. And all of a sudden you're looking at it thinking, this fella is ready to really take flight. And I'm sure he'll brush it off and he'll go again, as he tends to do. And in fairness, he was the only one who was looking like making anything happen yesterday, particularly in the first half, from an attacking perspective. But if he just converts the ones he should, his goal tally, he'll just quietly rise and rise. And then you're looking at it thinking, well, how many can this fella get? But he's got to start sticking those away, I think.
I mean, his goal contributions for the season, I had a look earlier, I think it's a goal and assist every 63 minutes, you know, for Liverpool in all competitions, which is brilliant. And if you, you know, you put that over 63 games or whatever it would be, you rack up with like 25 goals and 20 assists, which would be brilliant. And you'd expect that would deliver some big trophies for Liverpool. But as you say, it's the more, you know, if he was missing all the hard chances and burying the easy ones, you'd be like, well, is he a bit of a limited striker? But it's the fact that he's doing all the hard work and kind of the easy ones where, you know, he should just get a knee on it or, you know, shin on it or whatever. Yeah. He's kind of failing to put those away. And as Gorsy said, he'll dust himself down because he sadly, he's been in this position before where he's, you know, had big misses and stuff. But it's just now you hope that, you know, if he can get a few goals in midweek against Toulouse and a few at Brentford, then he's maybe going into that City game in a better frame of mind kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think like Gorsy said, I don't want to criticise him too much because he was one of the only players who looked like making anything happen yesterday, and he does deserve credit for that. But I think, as you say, you know, Liverpool probably back themselves in a lot of games now that even if they have a poor first half, that they'll come out in the second half stronger and they'll always come up with a goal. And I think yesterday proved that, you know, ultimately, obviously, they get the equaliser through Diaz, but as you say, against teams like Luton, who are going to sort of try and defend it and hold on for as long as they can, you really do need to put those chances away, don't you? But another player who struggled yesterday was Alexis McAllister, and I feel really sorry for him, to be honest. I'm a big fan of him. I think he's a brilliant player, and I just don't think we're seeing the best of him at all. I think, you know, Endo has obviously had sort of a mixed start to life on Merseyside, but for me, I just think he's a number six, playing in a number six role and playing McAllister a bit further forward. I mean, what are your thoughts on that goal? See, what are your thoughts on his performance?
Yeah, I mean, a bit torn, really, because the game against Forest, you can sort of see what the thinking is with McAllister in there. Doesn't have to snap into tackles and win them in a Fabinho-type manner or a Javier Mascherano. Very subtle, and it's all about touch and technique and vision, isn't it, with McAllister when he plays in there. And it worked well, I thought, against Forest. But then, you know, a week later, he's getting overrun and he's getting out-fought and out-battled, and it starts to become a little bit of a concern, doesn't it? You know, there was one there where he got booked when short corner gets taken to him and he kind of dawdles on it, loses it, and then he has to take a booking because it's a cynical one. And I think it was him who lost it. Was it him who lost the ball for the goal?
Simicast.
Yeah. I hadn't seen it back. I haven't had a chance to watch match of the day, but it seemed to picture in my head. It was McAllister. If it wasn't, then this point
might be Elliot. You know, it might have been.
It was an Elliot. Okay. I don't
know, just throwing people under the bus at this stage.
Yeah. Well, I'll err on the side of caution then with that one. But generally, I just didn't think it was his day. It's difficult because he's playing out of position, isn't it? And I think, you know, even Klopp will concede privately that they still need a world-class defensive midfielder, and the fact that they went after Moises Caicedo probably reveals as much, and the fact that Endo was a little bit of a stopgap, short cut price signing tells you as much as well. So there is evidence that Liverpool do think that as well. But until then, it looks like McAllister is going to be this number six, and my big concern is that Manchester City game in November, well, when is it, 23rd of November, is it 25th? Because I think McAllister as a lone six against City, even without Kevin De Bruyne, will be a difficult day for Liverpool to get something out of that one. Maybe we could bring Endo in for it. Maybe he'll go with two in there. I'm not sure. But I just wonder how long it's going to last as an experiment, because I can see little bits of it, of what they're working towards, but then I can see a lot more that isn't really working.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I think as well in the Premier League, sort of playing away from home is a different proposition, isn't it? Regardless of who you're playing against. And I think having him, as you said, the lone six away from home, regardless of whether it's, you know, a top of the table side or sort of relegation fodder, I just don't think that reason.
Especially against a side like Luton, who are probably going to be fighting on scrapping on second balls. And
yeah.
You know, you're going to have to get people around him and help him out. But it's interesting, as you say, Gorse. Yeah, I think for that City game, I've thought it since, you know, probably since September after the Wolves game. I think he'll do the 4-2-3-1 at City, and I think he'll do Szoboszlai and Jones just to get, obviously, Jones' ball retention. Obviously, he's really good, and I think that's, you know, it's a difficult task, getting the ball against City, so I think that'll be really important. And also, Szoboszlai, just his athleticism, I think he'll probably sacrifice McAllister for that one, because when he did it in, when he hooked him at Wolves, he went to the 4-2-3-1, I think, didn't he, for the second half, and they just looked so much better there. And it was kind of chalk and cheese with when McAllister in the first half getting overrun, kind of everything that yesterday was, and then the second half there was a lot more control and kind of stamped their authority on the game and were able to play. And I kind of thought that over the kind of the 6-8 weeks since that, in the big games, because I think that is a concern for McAllister. You know, when you are playing away from home, when you are, you know, going to Old Trafford in April, you know, potentially with top four on the line, or the, you know, if you're in a title challenge or whatever, you do need to go and kind of assert your dominance. So I think he could do that, but I think against Forest and those kind of sides, it will work, because he almost is given license to be more free, isn't he? Because Liverpool push higher up the field, and he's almost an extra number eight as opposed to a lone number six, isn't he? So, as you say, last week against Forest, he wins the ball back and drives it up the pitch. Yeah. And then, you know, then that sort of first goal plays through Salah, doesn't he? And then Salah plays it onto Szoboszlai or whatever. But, you know, it feels like, as Gorsy said, he's very much a stopgap solution at this point. But I don't think it's any fault of McAllister, because he's kind of doing, you know, we saw how long it took Fabinho to adapt to that role. And, you know, when Liverpool did get that role right, it kind of led to all the success. So it just, you know, it shows how important it is. But the flip side of that is, there's, as we've said so many times on this pod in recent months, there's such a lack of good number sixes or world-class number sixes out there who are available. I mean, there's what, Rodri, Declan Rice. I mean, Caicedo previously, I think, going to run at Chelsea. And after that, you're hoping to buy potential, aren't you? Like your Lavias and those kind of players. So it's kind of a sticky situation. So it'll be interesting to see if Liverpool do address it in January, or they do kind of persist with what they've got.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the one sort of semi-positive is that he actually picked up a fifth booking of the season yesterday. So
he'll miss
that game next week against Brentford, but he will be available for City as an option, you know, regardless of whether Klopp opts to play him or not. One thing I will just say, obviously, he picked up that booking from a short corner, didn't he? And I said to you earlier, I just can't abide short corners.
Yeah, get
in the box. I just think, you whip it in the box, you've got a chance of scoring directly. It could hit someone's hand, it could deflect in.
Get a penalty these days.
I just hate it, and I'm putting on record that I'm bad because it's something.
Down the barrel.
Yeah. It's almost well with that Woodley Pilar at set pieces, you know, one night goes forward, can I say?
Yeah, it's a bad line as well. Yeah, taking them.
Yeah, that was a baffling one, that.
Yeah. Another sort of player who struggled a little bit with was Joe Gomez starting at left back, and maybe another experiment that didn't really work out. I mean, I think it was the first time since 2018 Gomez had started at left back, and I did think when I saw the team, it doesn't spell good news for Tsimikas, really, does it? I mean, you would like to think that he would come straight into the team as sort of a like-for-like replacement for Andy Robertson, but I think even after that injury to Robertson the other week, Jurgen Klopp made a point of saying, you know, Gomez can play there as well, and we've got these young players, which at the time I thought that's not really a vote of confidence in Tsimikas. Obviously signed a new deal in September and then came on and had a sort of questionable cameo at the end, didn't he, really, Tsimikas? I mean, what do you think about that sort of left-back debate? Who do you think is the best person to play in there while Robbo's out?
Yeah, I'm surprised to see Gomez there, because when I think of Gomez at left-back, I just think of those very early Brendan Rodgers days for like 3-4 games, and he did well at the time, but you know, that was years and years ago. He's not a natural right-back, so he's certainly not a natural left-back. So difficult for him, but I can see the thinking in terms of Liverpool shifting into a back three and Trent going forward and doing what he does a little bit more. I think Gomez would be better suited to that than Tsimikas, but if it's a back four in a traditional sense, Tsimikas is obviously your man. But the problem is, you know, Robertson's going to be injured until January at the earliest, so Liverpool are playing a lot of games in that time, and you can't expect Tsimikas to play every game, because if he pulls up with something, then Liverpool really are in the mire, and it's not an ideal situation, is it? So I could maybe see Klopp thinking, well, maybe we can get away with, in inverted commas, Gomez at left back for this one, and maybe even for Toulouse on Thursday.
Especially with Townsend cutting in yesterday, I think that was probably behind his thinking as well, wasn't
it? And,
you know, the two lads on wide for Luton, I can't remember the lad's name on their left. But
I thought he had the...
Gave Trent a decent go, and clearly that was part of their kind of blueprint to get the ball out wide and isolate the fullbacks. And, you know, probably, you know, Gomez is a bit more defensively minded than Tsimikas, who's, you know, probably lacks the final ball that Tsimikas has at times. So,
there was no width, was there?
No.
Certainly,
especially when Trent comes inside as well, you lose it altogether, don't you?
So it's an awkward one, really, but it's what Liverpool are having to deal with, essentially, with Robertson out injured. And I could see the wisdom of not running Tsimikas into the ground. That's why I'm surprised he started on Wednesday night, to be honest. But, I think maybe Liverpool just thought they could get by without him, really, and obviously it didn't quite work out like that.
Yeah, I mean, we said on the pod last week that, you know, Liverpool, do they need to bring in another defender with Gerald Quance's sort of rise this season? And I think maybe yesterday showed that bringing in sort of a left-sided defender who could be versatile and maybe play left-back as well is maybe the way forward. But we've been quite negative so far today. So we'll go to a positive, and that's Luis Diaz, obviously incredibly brave of him to make himself available for the selection yesterday. And he comes on and gets his just reward, and he reveals a message on his shirt, which said freedom for Papa, which obviously then he released a powerful statement after the game, begging for the kidnappers of his father to release him immediately and end this painful wait. Obviously a hugely emotionally charged moment yesterday. Kiefer, I mean, what a hero he is for coming on and doing what he did in these circumstances.
Absolutely. I mean, let alone scoring, just for making himself available.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, you know, you can't even put into words, I mean, we'd have no experience of what he's been through. I mean, it just defies belief, doesn't it, really? And, you know, I suppose the good part of that is that I think this week has really highlighted the kind of camaraderie that there is at Liverpool. And I know you mentioned it in your verdict yesterday, and you go see kind of the South American contingent and how they've kind of, they all went to him at the final whistle and they kind of looked after him, and obviously they are closing it off the field as well. But yeah, I mean, you kind of run out of things to say. I mean, what do you say? I think Klopp said that a few times. I mean, you know, as a football manager, he can only say so much, and he's never had to deal with a situation like that before. I don't think anyone in football probably has. But yeah, it was just good to I suppose from his personal point of view, it does sound like you know, negotiations are ongoing. So hopefully, you know, that will be resolved soon. And for him just to get kind of back on the pitch and kind of take his mind off it, I'm sure he would have appreciated that as well. Just to kind of, you know, kind of imagine it being emotionally draining as well, if not physically draining from having, you know, no sleep. So to kind of get out there and, you know, resume training as he did earlier in the week. And as I say, score such a memorable goal and one that I'm sure will become iconic now, you know, if it hasn't already been broadcast across the globe millions of times. So yeah, just really pleased for him. It was obviously, as I say, a bit of a disappointment. Disappointing afternoon for Liverpool yesterday, but I think everyone, you know, regardless of who you support, can, you know, kind of put your allegiances to one side and just say that it was a really like beautiful Premier League moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think all this is happening at such a strange time for Diaz and his family as well, because his partner's pregnant at the moment, so that's got its own stresses and strains, you know, when your family life is normal and balanced. And also it was their daughter's second birthday as well last week, so they're trying to attempt to celebrate that in some sort of way without the grandfather being there, or, you know, not really knowing what the situation is on the other side of the world. So it's just been such a strange, surreal week for him. I actually asked him to stop and talk when he went past in the mix zone yesterday. I knew he'd say no, but I just thought, nothing ventured, nothing gained and all that. And he was polite about it, to be fair. He just had his head bowed and, you know, he was quite subdued, and he just sort of shook his head as if saying, not today. And I did speak to Van Dijk about it, and he said, everyone at the club, everyone in the squad is fully behind him. We support him. Any help that we can give him, we will give him that. And it's just such a horrible situation to be in, and we'll support him right through it. And I think you could see that at the end, couldn't you, with everyone going over to him? You know, Alisson with a big bear hug, and Endo was one of them, Van Dijk, and Tom Lockyer, to be fair, the Luton captain, he was on the first over there on the scene. Diaz's head has denied him a famous Premier League victory, and, you know, a day he would have cherished for the rest of his career, I'm sure, but some things were more important. So he was basically showing his respect and his admiration for it as well. And you can only say, what mental strength from Diaz to, like Keith says, just declare himself available, you know, let alone come off the bench and rescue his team from what would have been an embarrassment, really. So, yeah, fair play to him. Hopefully it's a situation that's resolved sooner rather than later, and we're not having to talk about it on Friday's pod. Negotiations are ongoing, we believe, between the Colombian government and the ELN, but the fact that we're even talking about that on a football podcast is just crazy, really.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I mean, I did find myself after the game, sort of, I think we've been a bit spoiled lately, haven't we, with Liverpool? I mean, only one defeat in 28 games, and you get a bit riled up when you have a result against you like you did yesterday, but then you, moments like that really put it into perspective, yeah, don't you? Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. Hopefully it will all be resolved very soon. But another positive yesterday, I thought Harvey Elliott, nice little cameo off the bench, and again, sets up Diaz for the winner. I mean, Keith, what did you make of his display yesterday? Because he's not really let Liverpool down this season when called upon, has he?
No, not at all. And he's a player I felt a bit sorry for this season, to be fair, because he's had a few Europa League starts, hasn't he, and in the Cup as well. But, you know, you look at kind of what he achieved last season. I think it was up until the Chelsea game, he played every game and finished with, you know, 44 odd appearances overall competitions, and only 19, 20 kind of age, and you think he, you know, made huge steps. And then this season, because of how much money he's been spent on this kind of restructuring of the midfield, he's kind of, you know, found himself, you know, playing a bit of a bit part role, and he has become that kind of designated first sub, hasn't he, on 60, 65. But, you know, his impact in so many games this season has been there, and he's so young and he's so vibrant, and he really does kind of give the team something, you know, when they kind of need to be, when you need that just bit of impetus to do something different or kind of be a bit braver in possession, he kind of brings that. And, you know, we saw that in the victory over Wolves in September when he comes on and kind of, you know, how Liverpool kind of seize control of the game. And yesterday as well, I mean, the ball is absolutely brilliant. As I say, all the plaudits will go to Diaz, and rightly so, for the header and everything that he's been through. But I've not seen a lot of people talk about the assist from Harvey Elliott. I mean, you know, the vision and to the audacity to try it is one thing, but to execute it is brilliant. You know, to put it between the kind of last defender and the goalkeeper in that kind of, you know, corridor of uncertainty to call it is brilliant. And, you know, as I say, I have felt a bit sorry for him this season because, like, you know, he should be rewarded with a start for that, but the competition for places at Liverpool, something, you know, there probably wasn't at times last season, is rife at the moment. So, you know, especially in those kind of two advanced midfield positions. But, you know, you'd imagine he'd get a start against Toulouse on Thursday, if not, you know, play a significant role. And then, you know, hopefully he can build from there and kind of push on.
Yeah, I mean, the testament, isn't it really glossy to what he's like as a character as well? I mean, it would be easy for him to feel frustrated having played such a large role last season, sort of being relegated to a role on the bench. But, you know, he never seems to sort of let it bother him, never seems to drop his head, and he comes on and puts in a display like that. Yes.
Yeah, I think he's carved out a little bit of a niche for himself now, hasn't he, as someone who can come on and really influence games. He's someone who sees himself growing in responsibility now as well within the group. He's obviously still one of the youngest in there. He's only 20, doesn't say 21 until April, but... Given the players who've left, the Milners, the Hendersons, Fabinho, Firmino, in case of Oxlade-Chamberlain, and the players who've come in are quite young themselves, aren't they? You know, Gravenberch is 21, McAllister's 24, Soboslai was 23 last week. You know, he sees himself with his experience now as someone who's a little bit of an influential voice within the group, and that seems to be shown in the authority of his performances. He's playing well, to be fair, and he just needs to keep it going and, you know, let the manager know that, you know, if he's choosing between Gravenberch and Jones for that third midfield slot, that he's as viable option as them two as well. So you'd imagine he will play on Thursday, and he's just got to keep it going.
Absolutely. Well, one thing I do just want to touch on briefly, something that happened sort of away from what was going on the pitch, but... more tragedy chanting, which unfortunately seems to be a regular issue now in the Premier League. It was something that I thought Jamie Carragher spoke very well about on commentary. It was something Jurgen Klopp came out to condemn after the game. And it's just so frustrating, isn't it, Gorsy? Because I think so many people treat it as a bit of banter and just sort of part and parcel of going to the football. But it's really damaging, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You know, I got to a stage around about a year ago, actually, when it just felt like it was happening every game and you were banging your head against the wall and you were just saying the same things every week. And then I didn't really notice it much since then, but you couldn't really fail to miss it yesterday, clear as day. Where we were sitting, actually, we were in the basically in with the home fans, and you couldn't miss it. It was you know, surrounded by it. And there was someone who was sitting next to me. I'd never met him, actually. I don't know who he was working for, but I think he heard my accents, and, you know, he knew I was from Liverpool. And he just sort of turned to look at me to see my reaction of feed the Scousers, and then the Hillsborough-related stuff. And all I could do was just say, you know, it's horrendous that this just keeps happening. And it's one of them now where, you know, people come out and condemn it every time it happens, and it just carries on happening. Now, if people are kind of unaware as to what it means, then you could maybe say, fair enough, it happened once. Now, you know, it's, you know, taken as a slayer against the 97 victims of Hillsborough. Leave it at that, say no more, never, ever mention it again. And you, you know, reasonably expect people to say, okay, fair enough. You know, in the same way, any kind of discriminatory chant, if people are unaware of what it meant, and then they find out what it meant, and then it ends good. But people try to argue the toss. People try to say that it's not about Hillsborough and this, that, and the other. And, you know, if the Hillsborough families are saying it is, then why can't they just be listened to and it just you know, cease to exist? That doesn't seem to be the case. It's just too easy now for that chance to be thrown out against Liverpool fans. And it's just sad that it keeps happening. And I haven't actually heard what Carragher said, because it was obviously after the game, and I haven't had the chance to kind of digest much coverage of it other than our own. But I believe he was very well spoken on it, and good on him for saying that. And I think we've got a responsibility to call out on the likes of these podcasts and in our coverage and that type of stuff. So yeah, good on Carragher for that. And let's hope we don't have to in the future. But, you know, evidence says that we will, sadly.
I think it's sad because it's become so commonplace, hasn't it, in football? And it's kind of like social media, isn't it? It was like that mob mentality of, well, you know, I'm in a crowd full of people, of, you know, another 600 people are sat around me, they're all doing it, so it must be acceptable, and it isn't. And I suppose now it's like, as Gorsy says, you know, what course of action do you take? Because, you know, not only have they been told by the club or the authorities or whatever, but, you know, the actual people who are these chants are affecting and causing, you know, serious harm to every time they hear it on the telly or hear it in away ends. You know, they're hearing it from the horse's mouth. And if that isn't enough to stop them or enough to discourage them from doing it again, well, what is, you know, a fine? Well, that's not going to solve anything. You know, it is just really sad. And yeah, it's just the thing that for me was that, like, last year there was a bit with City, wasn't there? Well, there has been over the last couple of years, kind of that rivalry with City has intensified, and kind of City have sung that, you know, whether they come to Anfield or Liverpool go to the Etihad. But I was just thinking, what business have Luton got in that? You know, that's, I think that just shows how common places yeah. become, because, you know, this isn't two teams going for the title, or, you know, big rivals on and off the field. It's a team Liverpool haven't played for the best part of, what, 15 years. And it's, you know, it's their big day on Sky Sports kind of thing. And, you know, their biggest game of the season so far will be one of their biggest games of the Premier League season. And they're kind of ruining it with that. And it's just like, it's just not a good look, and it leaves a really sour taste, because on an afternoon that should have been, you know, we should be talking about other things. You know, Luis Diaz's heroics and Luton's performance, you know, doing really well. We're talking about this again, which, as Gorsy says, we'll probably be doing two or three times before the season's out again, no doubt. So it's just a real shame, and it, as you said, it really does need to stop.
I remember when Liverpool played Norwich on the first game of the 21-22 season, Billy Gilmore was on loan from Chelsea at the time, and there was obviously a derogatory chant aimed at Gilmore because of that. And then Liverpool got Klopp to sit down with Paul Amann from Cop-Outs, and he basically said, explained why the chant was derogatory to a certain group, and why it should stop, and then it essentially has since then. Mm-hmm. And that is kind of the point that I was making just then. You know, if people who are affected by certain chants come out and tell you, look, can you stop chanting this? This is why it's, you know, insulting and offensive and whatever else, then why can't they be listened to? Mm-hmm. So we'll see. Hopefully it does kind of fade away, but I'm not convinced it will just yet, sadly.
And the thing is with that, you know, those chants that were sung at the time, it feels like now you don't hear them out because they're self-policed. You know, people know they have a responsibility. They've heard it from the manager. Yeah. They've heard it from the people it affects. And people have now took that moral decision to, well, you know, I might not think it means that, but the person who, who's at the centre of it, it feels, you know, deeply offended by it. So if they don't like it, I'm not going to sing it. And it feels like now, you know, I go to a lot of Liverpool games and I don't think I've heard that probably since then. Mm-hmm. And that's a credit to Liverpool fans for listening, and, you know, also kind of the social responsibility of people who do go to the games have been like, you know, you don't sing that, mate, or, you know, that's not on kind of thing. But clearly that effect isn't trickling down the Premier League.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, I mean, I think Liverpool fans know, don't they, that the impact that derogatory chants like that can have, and maybe that's why, you know, they've been sort of leaders in stamping out those sorts of chants within their own ranks. I mean, I remember going to a Villa game. I think it was the game that Mane scored, the late winner a couple of years back, and coming out of the stadium and minding my own business, and a grown man got in my face and started shouting sort of derogatory chants, and it, sort of the level of vitriol and stuff that is sort of swept aside as banter and things like that is absolutely disgusting. Yeah. And, you know, as Gorsy said, all we can do is sort of bang the drum and try and raise awareness of that as much as we possibly can, and hopefully we'll get to a point where we're not talking about it anymore. But yeah, just moving on, as I say, Kara spoke really well about that on Sky, but he then went on after sort of it in the analysis of the game to sort of reflect on what the impact the game could have on Liverpool's title chances. And he went as far as saying, you know, everyone knows Liverpool aren't title challengers this season. And I thought that was a bit harsh, really. I think, you know, we're still sort of at the stage of the season where we're still learning about this Liverpool side and we don't fully know what they can achieve this season. Yeah. But when you consider, you know, obviously frustrating result yesterday, but they're still only 3 points off the top of the league, albeit with Tottenham to play against Chelsea tonight. But do you still think there's a chance that this Liverpool side could fashion an opportunistic title challenge?
Yeah, I mean, City are obviously the favourites for reasons that, you know, maybe look over the last 5 years, the last 10 years, they're the team to beat, aren't they? But I wouldn't necessarily say Liverpool aren't. Can't challenge at all. You know, do we consider Arsenal as challenges? Did Arsenal challenge last season? It all depends on how you define that challenge, doesn't it? You know, Liverpool taking City to within the last 15 minutes of seasons. Now that is a challenge, isn't it? They're proper challenges. So it all depends on how you define it, I guess. Put it this way, I don't think Liverpool are going to finish lower than third this season. Now, does that mean that they'll be challenges? We'll find out, I guess. So, yeah, I think, like you say, we are just learning about what this Liverpool team are capable of. Maybe some bad habits that they need to shake off after last season. But it's all fresh and new, isn't it? And I think one of the things they do need to learn fast is to not be dropping City points like to teams who were in the relegation zone.
Mm-hmm. Now, before we move on to Toulouse, which obviously Liverpool travel there on Thursday, I just want to give a quick mention to the women's team who actually beat Leicester City 2-1 yesterday. And that means that 3 wins from 5 out of the opening 5 games of the season, they drew one as well. So they're third in the league on 10 points. So they could be mounting a cheeky little title challenge of their own this season.
If they stop playing Everton and Anfield, they might have a chance.
But yeah, I think it's just worth noting that obviously they played at Prenton Park, and obviously yesterday, if fans were down at Luton, they wouldn't have been able to make it for the women's game. But if fans are around and the women are playing at Prenton Park, they get down and give them some support, because I think they've been excellent this season, and great to see them getting another 3 points on the board yesterday. But we will move on now to Thursday. So Liverpool play Toulouse in the Europa League. They only need 2 points to guarantee qualification, Kiefer. What sort of game are you expecting on Thursday? Do you think Liverpool will be fired up and wanting to bounce back after that at Luton?
Yeah, absolutely. And even if they are to make wholesale changes, which I think we all probably expect, you know, they've shown this season numerous times that they've got the quality to kind of dispatch opposition, especially in the Europa League, you know, what they did last time to Toulouse at Anfield. So that's kind of the aim, isn't it? To get a few goals, keep a clean sheet and secure qualification. I think, you know, there's obviously they all want to go far in the Europa League, but I think there's a greater incentive this year with the team who finishes first in the group getting a bye to the last 16. So, you know, that avoids Liverpool 2 games in February, March time, which, you know, if they are going to, you know, be challenging on other fronts, whether it be the League Cup, the FA Cup and the Premier League, I'm sure, you know, 2 spare game weeks or midweek games, you know, spared on the calendar will be greatly appreciated by Klopp. So absolutely, I mean, they've kind of taken this Europa League group lightly. I mean, me and Gorsi were saying before that we haven't even really paid much attention to anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, it does sound bad, but God, I couldn't really tell you how the few of the three have been getting on amongst each other. It's almost just like Liverpool getting their business done and they won't have to worry too much about anything else.
Absolutely. I mean, they've made light work of the group so far, and, you know, people probably look at it and think it's the Europa League, it's second rate, but I mean, United and teams like that have struggled in the past, so, you know, you can only kind of beat what's ahead of you, and you know, as I say, if they kind of put themselves in good stead with qualification, then, you know, they'll be in the round of 16, and then that's, I think, when the competition starts to get serious, you know, when you get the kind of the Champions League knockouts, and, you know, you'll get the big kind of spring nights at Anfield, and, you know, I think people maybe start to appreciate the Europa League a slightly bit more, myself included. But yeah, as opposed to Thursday, I'd expect, you know, numerous changes. You know, might see one of the young fullbacks come in, you know, Ben Doak maybe get a run out after a few weeks out, you know, the likes of Harvey Elliott come in, and then just all about getting the job done, really, and hopefully in kind of double quick time, so they can make a few changes ahead of Sunday against Brentford.
Mm-hmm. And as Kiefer said there, Gorsi, it's a good chance, isn't it, for Klopp to sort of assess his squad, particularly after a defeat,
It was a defeat. Draws are not good for Liverpool.
After yesterday's result, it gives Klopp a chance to sort of assess his squad, doesn't it?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what he does at left back. You know, obviously, Luke Chambers played against Toulouse, and the, as you say, we don't want to run Tsimikas into the ground. Endo is a pretty nail-on staple fixture of the Europa League, isn't he? Cody Gakpo might start.
McAllister will now, won't he, after?
Yeah, you'd expect McAllister to start. Maybe Jones or Elliot, possibly Elliot.
What was wrong with Jones yesterday?
Just a minor knock, apparently, but I mean, the pool tell you they've played with minor knocks all the time and they're on for a while. So, I mean, hopefully he spotted it training this week. We'll find out, won't we? But yeah, maybe a chance for Cody Gakpo to get a bit of momentum. Does he start now? Maybe even Mendo. Lots of options for Klopp, and it's quite nice that the pool are, you know, they don't have to go full big guns, did he, for this one. They can probably qualify without getting out of second gear, and that's pretty much what we're expecting at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we'll obviously be sort of doing a deep dive into that game on Friday and looking ahead to Brentford at the weekend, but just sort of as an overview, Kiefer, I mean, it's a big week for Liverpool in terms of you want them to have a couple of strong performances, don't you, to sign off for the international break?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing worse than dropping points before an international break, and can't tell you last time. Oh, Brighton, that was it, wasn't it? And it, that kind of international break felt
the most recent one.
Yeah. But it felt, you just kind of dragged on for ages, didn't it? Yeah. And there's nothing worse than the international break, even when you've had a win. So to kind of sign off when you've not had a win is the worst. So, you know, they've made good habits, haven't they, Liverpool, so far, these kind of Sunday afternoon kickoffs. They had the one against Villa in early September. They had the one against Forest last week. And, you know, they kind of compare that with Forest's trip to Anfield in April, I think it was, when they kind of made a dog's ear of it, didn't they? I think it was 3-2, kind of late goals. You know, that's the blueprint now, isn't it? You make loads of changes on a Thursday, and then on a Sunday you turn up to Anfield, and you get the job done. And then I think, you know, with the amount of rotation and the options in the squad, you know, you can still field two really strong sides. So that's what Liverpool will be about this week. And then it's all eyes on that game at City, isn't it? It kind of feels like, the later we get into this pod, we just keep edging the games, don't we? Looking forward to Thursday, looking forward to Saturday, looking forward to City. But that's it, isn't it? So it's a big week for Liverpool, just in terms of kind of getting back on track and kind of remembering who they are, I think.
Yeah, we'll make you do your team predictions, because it's quite hard to guess who's going to be starting for Liverpool. But score prediction, Gorsley?
Yeah, I mean, the 5-1 was the biggest result of the season, wasn't it? To lose didn't cause Liverpool too many problems. I can see it being another comfortable night, 2-0 maybe, in Liverpool at the through.
Again, 2-1. I always predict wins, and they always win. So I don't think I've ever got the score right, but 2-1 just feels like the safest bet with the amount of changes there probably could be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the Ghosty went 2-0 for his prediction for yesterday, so hopefully it doesn't prove to be a bad omen on Thursday.
Like Mark Lawrence, the one who used to be the beast, you call him.
Liverpool invincible for 5 years straight.
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully Liverpool will return to winning ways against Toulouse on Thursday. We'll be back later in the week, but thank you for joining us for the latest episode of Blood Red Podcast.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.